The following may contain offensive language, adult humor, and or content that some viewers may find offensive. The views and opinions expressed by any one speaker does not explicitly or necessarily reflect or represent those of Mark Rattledge or W2M Network. Please listen with caution, or don't listen at all. Hang on. I don't know where my theme went. Oh, there it is. Ah, yes, now we are back in the comic book store with our Ministry of Silly Hats. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm your mandated reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge, and this is Comic Strip, the podcast where we compare and contrast comic books, graphic novels, etc., to their movies, television shows, stage plays, musicals, whatever they're adapted into, mostly movies.
Two Guns musical. I could see that.
I mean, everything else being made into a musical. And ladies and gentlemen, the man with the silly hat. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back from his previous engagement where we discussed The Losers. Evan Bevins, good to his mother. How do you do, sir?
I'm doing okay. I'm not going to keep this on the whole time. I was inspired by Denzel. And I had a hat that was closer to his. But A, I couldn't find it. And B, I can't pull off the same hat as Denzel. So...
It was, that looked a little too, like, sombrero-ish, as opposed to, you know, the smaller bolo hat-ish that he's wearing throughout the movie.
I swear I've got something like that somewhere, but, you know, it's been one of these days. I don't know, whenever I schedule podcasts with you, things start to break down around my house, and it was either that or a Donald Duck hat I got when I went to Disney World when I was a kid, so.
Yeah, this is why we don't do this more than, like, 6 months at a time.
I know. Small doses. I understand.
All right. So we are talking Two Guns tonight. Two Guns began its life as a comic book written by Stephen Grant. Hey, Evan Bevins. Who is, for TikTok purposes, who is Stephen Grant and what has he done?
Well, Stephen Grant is one of the alternate personalities of Moon Knight. I think the dominant one is Mark Spector. Oh, wait. We're talking about the guy that wrote this comic.
Yep.
Okay. He is not Moon Knight, at least as far as I know.
Is he also not Aquaman's mother?
Yeah, that's Nicole Kidman. Everybody knows that.
You hurt me every time you say that. A little part of me dies every time.
Oh, well, as long as it's just a little part. Stephen Grant has written for Marvel and DC. I think one of his most famous ones is probably the original Punisher limited series. They didn't introduce the Punisher, he didn't create them, but the first time the Punisher had his own name on a comic, you know, where Marvel was like, hey, what if we just have the guy with a skull and a shirt that shoots people? What if we just let him do his thing and not put Spider-Man in the book?
Okay, so this is his first limited series post his appearance in The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yes.
Okay. Really?
Well, I believe
so. He's responsible for one of the characters that killed comics. Interesting.
I don't think the Punisher killed comics. And look at all the freedom-loving people he's inspired today.
I feel like, with my specious reasoning, that giving the Punisher his own comic book series and, you know, making him a hero in his own right, and then people became obsessed with him to the exclusion of many other characters, is what led to the downfall of comics. I'm just going to throw that out there.
But then the Punisher just disappeared for a while, and then they brought him back as an angel. Because why not?
And a ghostwriter, and a baby, and all kinds of stuff. And the Punisher killed the Marvel Universe at some point, you know.
Yeah. Ah, well, who hasn't?
Yes, the line of characters killing the Marvel Universe forms to the left.
And then Squirrel Girl beat up the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, well, okay. Yeah, Squirrel.
I've done a prop. I've butchered a movie reference. I've mentioned Squirrel Girl. I think I've done everything I'm obligated to do, except actually talk about the comic movie we're here to talk about. So,
you've also mired the good name of an Academy Award winning actress. So you've really hit the full Evan Bevins bingo card tonight.
I said I butchered a movie reference.
It's a whole other thing that I'm now mad at you about.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry about it. But, yeah, Mark, I assure you that is far and away the worst thing I'll do this evening.
Moving on. So Stephen Grant.
Well, no, at first I didn't recognize the name, and then I started. I mean, he did all kinds of. He's done Spectacular Spider-Man, Marvel Team Up, What If. He's written The Avengers and The Incredible Hulk. He even did write Moon Knight. At one point, I don't think that's why he's named Stephen Grant, though. But yeah, we did cover last time that Andy Diggle did inspire the name of the character John Diggle. He and Mike Zeck did a Punisher limited series in 1986. Oh, and an original hardcover graphic novel of him 3 years later. Stephen Grant, I think, is one of those guys who I've probably read more than I realized.
It sounds that way. It looks like he's definitely been around for a while.
Oh yeah, I kind of thought, you know, he's one of these, you know, up and coming guys who couldn't get his screenplay produced, so he made it a comic. But no, he's a comic book veteran, and this just seemed like a thing he wanted to do. That seems what I got anyway.
Okay, so he wrote this book, Two Guns, and the according to Comic Vine. In the vein of Ocean's 11 and The Italian Job, Two Guns is a pulp story about cops and thieves and the men that are something in between. Trench has targeted a local bank to rob and asked Stedman on the job. Trench figures it's a great way to score, considering it's a cover for mob money. There'll be thieves ripping off thieves. But what Stedman doesn't know is that Trench is a DEA agent. Dun, dun, dun. And what Trench doesn't know is that Stedman got his own secret, and he isn't who he appears to be. Classic Two Gun safe robbing action. Delivered with the wit and charm from the writer, creator of Whisper. Evan Bevins, what's Whisper?
Oh, man. I was reading about that earlier. Whisper is a female ninja that he created at Capital Comics in 1983.
Okay.
Only two issues and a promotional poster of the series were published.
So he made Two Guns for Boom Studios, as I recall. Mm-hmm. This is from 2007. This ran from April 1st of 2007 to December of 2007. So, you know, that timely comic book production that we've come so used to. And had you read this contemporaneously? Did you only read it when I suggested that we do the adaptation, the podcast?
I didn't know. I mean, I saw the movie and then I didn't see the movie. I saw the movie advertised and then somewhere along the way, I was like, it was a comic. And, you know, of course, everything. I mean, where did people get movies before comics?
Novels. Great American.
Yeah. So, no, I was not familiar with it. I tend not to. Well, I used to not stray too far outside of Marvel and DC. Now with Hoopla and things like that. There's all kinds of stuff, you know, you can check out. That's where I found this.
Like Billionaire Island from Ahoy Comics.
I don't think that was on Hoopla. I actually had to get the physical copy of that.
Oh my God, Devin.
Well, hey, I still like Billionaire Island. I stand by that one. I don't like everything Mark Russell does, but I like Billionaire Island.
Everything Mark Russell does is amazing. I got Jesse hooked up to do Not All Robots in the near future.
I'm not familiar with that one.
It's another Mark Russell book.
What did he's done something, I think, finally for Marvel recently, and he did a DC book called One Star Squadron.
Okay, did he manage to annoy the piss out of most comic book readers?
I don't know. I didn't read that one, but he did do Prez, which you should get Jesse to do for the election year next year.
I'll be sure to mention it to him.
Dystopian future where social media determines the outcome of elections. Totally different from the real world.
You know, speaking of which, that's a great segue actually for one of the few we've ever done. There's a joke in the Simpsons show. You're familiar with the Simpsons, yes?
Yes.
There's a joke, and
really liked it before OJ got in all that legal trouble, and then it just wasn't the same.
Anywho,
the show about Homer, Bart, Marge, Lisa, and Maggie.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They're showing Homer a movie, and Homer goes, So what you're saying is that the DEA knew the FBI was setting up the CIA? Like, Homer, that's not what the movie was about. I know, but when I get bored, I make up my own plot line. And
Stephen Grant said, wait a minute.
And Stephen Grant decided that one line in The Simpsons should be my entire basis for this comic book. So as I read in the little plot synopsis there from Comic Vine, you have one guy who's a DEA agent, and he's deep undercover trying to bring down a Mexican mob boss. And he partners up with someone who he thinks is a ne'er-do-well, but the ne'er-do-well, as it turns out, is a naval officer who has gone undercover to rob a mob front bank, and they want to use the money for clandestine operations.
Do they really?
That is what is said. And as it turns out, it's not just a mob front. It's actually a stow house for CIA money because they need the money for clandestine operations.
Or just really big CIA parties.
You know, I have to ask you, because I know how much you're involved. You're a deep and serious thinker who really likes to look at politics and the news and think about the issues of the day. I know that about you, Evan Bevins.
Right. As with our recent discussion about my chosen presidential ticket of Mr. T and Amy Adams, yes.
Uh-huh. So you're the perfect person to bring this up with. But other than, I mean, the Comic Vines compared it to Ocean's 11 and the Italian Job. But I was thinking about, especially when the reveal in the comic book is that it's actually the CIA's money. And the CIA plays the heavy trying to get this money back from these two idiots. And I was thinking about, I wonder how much Stephen Grant knew about the triangle trade between the Contras and the CIA and the cocaine trade, where I don't know if you know this or not in all seriousness, but way back in the 80s, where the Congress would no longer fund CIA operations in, I believe it was Nicaragua, they started buying cocaine, selling it, and then buying guns with the money to give to the Contras to fight Nicaragua against communism, you see.
Mm-hmm.
If you're interested in this, there's an entire television show based on this called Snowfall, right, which ran for several seasons.
Now. Right. Okay.
And that was
also, if you recall, a heavy plot point in The Losers.
That's right. See, it all comes together for us. So I was wondering if, like, how many of these comic writers were aware? Because, I mean, the whole reason why I know about it is that, it's been documented over and over and over again, despite being denied by the likes of, like, Bill Bennett and so forth, that this ever happened. But the San Jose Press, I think it was, whatever newspaper in San Jose, ran an entire series of news articles about the CIA crack trade. And, you know, people that swear by this, there's been books that are written. I think I came to know about it through a book called Whiteout. But I wonder how many comic book writers, this is the point I'm getting to. I wonder how many comic book writers are aware of it, and like, this would make for a great comic book, because I feel like it's inspired a bunch.
Well, we've talked about two of them. So yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of. I'm probably more aware of the pop culture it's generated than the actual facts. But yeah, I mean, I was reading this and I'm like, wait, which came first, this or The Losers? I mean, they're very similar in tone and style and things like that. And I honestly, you know, think Stig could probably be interchanged with Chris Evans' character from The Losers. That was who I was thinking of. But yeah. I mean, I think it's something that, you know, people see as ripe for a story, and it really happened. It's something that's crazy enough that it sounds made up, but it really happened. And I mean, you know, there's all kinds of you know, stories of, you know, going undercover, blurring the lines, or doing the wrong thing for the right reasons and stuff like that. So
I do, as far as, you know, boogeymen and pop cultures go, the CIA, could you imagine if you're like a American patriotic CIA agent and there's just mounds and mounds of books and comics and movies and television shows that make the CIA into, you know, like, it's like the Nazis and the CIA. It's like they're just terrible all the time. I find that wildly amusing, more amusing than either the movie or the comic book. Just this idea of when people sit down to think about, like, what government agency frightens the shit out of people and does horrible things. The CIA, that's the one. That's the one I want to make the villain of this story.
When really the X-Files warned us it was FEMA.
It was what?
FEMA.
Oh. Message.
All Future. Right. Martin Landau.
Yep. So what'd you think of the comic book Two Guns?
I enjoyed it. I was a little disappointed because, I mean, right in the first issue, there's way more than two guns. So right there, I mean, I like accurate titles. No, I did enjoy it. I usually read the comic first and then watch the movie, but scheduling worked out that I watched the movie first. So, and as much as I'd like to say that doesn't influence me, I have a long history of leaning toward whichever one I saw first. But I did enjoy the comic. I was comparing it a lot to the movie involuntarily, because I don't know. I felt like Denzel's version of Bobby was a little bit more distinctive than the comic book version of Bobby. But no, I did enjoy the comic. I like the art. I like the way, like, the art doesn't look at first glance like you would expect for a, you know, quote unquote realistic series. And hey, right there, I said quote unquote instead of doing, you know, finger quotation marks, because podcasts are an audio medium.
Very good. I'm glad you listened.
There you go. I enjoyed it. I thought it was. I always do think it's interesting to see the changes. And when I was a kid, I assumed that when people did adaptations, they just changed crap for no reason. And now it's interesting to actually see and think about why maybe they make those changes or how they come to them. I generally enjoyed it, and I liked the more comic bookish art. I guess it looks a little more cartoony than you would expect. I would have thought, you know, some more, you know, gritty, darker art, but I really liked the way that I can't pronounce the artist's name, he's a good artist.
This is my kind of comic. This was a lot easier to understand than The Losers was. Quite frankly, it was a lot easier to understand than Cowboys and Aliens was, the last two shows that we did.
Yeah,
this one was definitely more in my wheelhouse. I read it on Sunday. I read it over the course of a day because I was reading it at work, so I had to stop periodically and, you know, work. But
you got to do what you got to do, man.
I can't believe they make me work at work. It's fucking ridiculous. Fucking fascist. Anyway, but it was a fairly simple thing. It was. I go back to that line about, like, was this DEA knew the CIA was setting up the FBI. I love the idea that both of these guys think they're setting up the other guy. And they're both working on the side of good.
Yeah.
And they both think that the CIA makes for a, you know, And I can't remember when, if they knew ahead of time that it was a CIA stash house, or if it was, or if they figured it out after.
Bobby didn't know. Stig, or Stedman, as he goes by it when he's not undercover, I think he knew.
Okay.
But, you know, to his credit, if you meet a guy named Bobby Beans, you're not going to think he's DEA. I mean, that's an excellent cover name.
I did like the line in this: "Never rob a bank across from a place with the best donuts in three counties."
Yeah,
that's a quality line.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, there were a lot of good lines in this.
Mm-hmm. I like so Bobby, and I don't want to compare too much to the film just yet, but Bobby doesn't seem necessarily hapless necessarily.
No,
but he seems a little in over his head.
He's very straightforward. He's got this thing that he's trying to do. He's got this mission. He takes it very seriously. He's going to have his partner's back, if for no other reason than she's his partner, not because he's sleeping with her, not because she wears really, really distracting shirts or anything like that. But I mean, no, but he's like, this is how I'm doing it. And he's in this, you know, fake life, undercover life, but as long as it's on his terms, he can deal with it.
It feels like he had a plan and it just got away from him because he didn't know that he was working with a naval officer who was setting him up.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that, because so many times that we read these comic books, the characters seem like they always have it like firmly, and you know, they're surrounded by mobsters and monsters and aliens and whatnot, and you know, but they got it, but they're cooler than the other side of the pillow, and they've got it always all in hand. And I don't feel like a lot of these writers put a lot of tension in what they're writing, and this one, you know, like it comes across like Bobby has just got his head above water, and you know, and one false move and he's gonna sink. And that was more enjoyable for me to read than somebody who, you know, is always one step ahead of everybody else in the comic book, which is getting a little boring for me.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it. That's a great way to describe it.
And then Stigman, when he shoots Bobby in the shoulder,
uh-huh.
and reports to the Navy, and I'm like, oh, well, that makes total sense then. And, you know, and he's like, and it was one of those where it's just like, I don't really want to murder this guy in cold blood unnecessarily.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the other thing. Nobody who you're supposed to be rooting for is a scumbag. Not to mention the fact that they're working for government agencies, so they're already like, well, they're supposed to be on the side of good.
Yeah.
But I mean, so many times when we read these crime comics, I don't feel sympathetic towards the lead.
Yeah.
And in Stigman's case specifically, yeah, he was given a mission. Yeah, he was told kill him at the end. And at the end he was like, but why? I'll just wing him and it'll be fine. The point was to get the money. That's what's important here, not the death of, and he doesn't know he's an agent at the time, but not the death of this guy.
Yeah. And I think Stigman too is one of those who is not 15 steps ahead of everybody, but I think he faked it better than Bobby in the comic. He didn't seem super, he seemed like he was cool with everything. And then, you know, he's like, okay, yeah, we're going to go get the money. And he's like, okay, where we go? Well, it's probably at this base, but if it's not, the guys there will know.
Right.
Bobby's like, wait,
I don't have a whole lot. I mean, the art's fine in this. I don't have any major problems with the art. I will say this, because you were talking about distracting shirts on the woman, and every woman in comic has at least D to G boobs, and they all have Barbie waists. Like, I've seen women in my life. Truly, I have. And I have seen women who work for government agencies. Let me tell you how they don't look like that.
But you got to admit, Deb, by comic book standards, seems almost normal human.
Look, she's not Power Girl. I'll give you that. But I mean, you know, when that's like the thing you have to deal with in comics at the top of the scale, Power Girl in her boob window.
Right. Yeah. No. I get what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I liked, you know, we've talked before, especially with Cowboys and Aliens, mm-hmm. how certain comics almost seem like they were supposed to be movies and the guy just couldn't get it made. So
yeah,
that's kind of what I thought about this one till I looked into Stephen Grant's background, and I'm like, I think this is a guy. I mean, maybe he thought it could be a movie, but this is a guy who works in comics. But there was a scene that I'm almost kind of surprised didn't make it into the movie. I know we're not supposed to compare yet, but the one in issue three where he takes Manny's limo and then just leaves him, and then something clicks and he's like, wait a minute, how did you and he like reverses it. Like I could see that one being in the movie. I'm almost surprised it wasn't. That was a very cinematic scene.
You know, well, I'm glad you brought that point up because it was something that was in the back of my head. A lot of times I read these books, I'm like, this would make a great movie, and this is already a movie. You know, like they adapted it almost 7 years later into a movie. The books were written in 2007, and the movie came out in, I believe, 2013. But reading the book without knowing that it's going to be that I'm going to have to watch the movie after, just thinking about the book by itself, this screamed movie. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny. So many of these comic books do, especially the ones that are crime based, because there's not a whole lot they have to do as far as special effects and everything. And these are all somewhat grounded in reality. Like, this is entirely plausible, presumably, that you have these two guys robbing the sleepy bank. Mm-hmm. That happens to be a stash house for the CIA and the mob and the Mexican mob. And, you know, hilarity ensues.
Yeah.
As an elevator pitch, that works for me.
Oh, definitely. And I like the fact that, I mean, you've seen these stories a lot, like, you know, somebody goes undercover and they get too close, or maybe the criminal they're working with isn't quite the scumbag that they've been led to believe. And so, I mean, that's a pretty standard story. And then it's like, well, what if both the guys were undercover? And that just kind of turns it on its ear enough that it opens up all these different possibilities. I mean, I think, you know, we've both read and seen a bunch of stuff where, you know, a guy gets in too deep undercover and there's you know, somebody who's not so bad, and maybe the people he's working for are double crossing him, but now it's doubled, and then it starts, you know, interlacing and all this stuff. So I think that was a cool way to riff on a story that's pretty familiar.
The other thing I really like about this is that these guys kick a hornet's nest, their own agencies, plus the CIA, plus the mob. So they are two guys in the middle of four sets of enemies trying to fight for their lives. It's a fun concept. Like, again, an elevator pitch, that really works for me, because they are right in the middle of the Navy's after them, the CIA's after them, the DEA's after them, and the Mexican mob is after them.
And they really don't even have much time to figure out, like, okay, who's right in this? They're just, you know, trying to save themselves.
Well, yeah, well, really, who does own Captain America's shield? Like, they have no time to sit for 3 hours and discuss it with, you know, on a podcast.
Indeed. As far as it highlights, I did like some of the dialogue in here. Probably my favorite is when they're down at Manny's farm and he's, you know, threatening them. He wants to kill Bobby and all this stuff. And Stig just like, look, let's just stipulate that you're tough. Okay. You don't get to where you are without being tough. So quit trying to convince us. My favorite line, if we sucker punch your mother in the mouth, that could understand the attitude, but this is just business. And 50 million buys a lot of forgiveness. And even Manny's like, yeah, he's got a point.
One of my favorite lines is actually the line from the top of the comic book issue. And it's, ever since I've met you, I've made nothing but stupid decisions.
that was a good one. I was a little confused. I don't know. I think the one that you're showing the cover of is the one I read, and it had quotes at the beginning of each issue, but they weren't quotes in that issue. I found that very distracting. Oh, that has nothing to do with the quality of the story or anything else, but I was like, wait a minute, they didn't even say that this issue. Like, I think most of the quotes were pulled from issues 4 and 5.
So do you know anything else about Two Guns as far as, like, was it popular amongst readers? Is it spoken about in, you know, like, comic book, you know, amongst comic book people, anything like that?
I do not. I didn't even know about it until I think the movie was out on video before I even heard that it was a comic book. So no, I did not know anything about it.
Okay.
The only other thing I would say about I like the ending. I like the way things wrapped up in issue 5, but I don't know. It wasn't, thought it could have been a little more dynamic of an ending. Again, maybe I was comparing to the the movie, but I don't know. It seemed like it got kind of small at the end. If that makes sense. The scale kind of, I mean, but it ended up being, you know, pretty personal stakes. So it wasn't bad, but I don't know. It just didn't, I don't know. It didn't seem to keep ramping up.
It always comes down to a damsel in distress.
Yeah. Unless she's the mastermind.
It was me, James. I was the author of all your pain. All right. So let's talk about the movie now.
Okay.
Two Guns is a 2013 American buddy cop action film directed by Baltazar Comacure, who, if you don't know who he is, he directed a bunch of movies going all the way back to 1996. He directed The Sea in 2002. He directed A Little Trip to Heaven in 2005. Let's see. Has he done anything anyone's ever heard of? He did The Deep in 2012. I think he's working out of, like, Iceland.
He did Two Guns.
He did Everest in 2015, which stars Jason Clarke and Jake Gyllenhaal. He did The Oath in 2016, Adrift in 2018, and then last year, he directed Beast. Did you see this? Beast with Idris Elba?
Oh, yeah. That was good.
Okay, yeah, he directed it.
I ain't lying.
Wah, 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 wah. He's done a little bit of television. So here, Baltazar Comacure is an Icelandic actor, director, theater, and film director, best known for 101 Reykjavik. Somebody out there, like Robert or somebody, to be like, how did you pronounce that? Leave me alone. The Sea, A Little Trip to Heaven, Contraband, Two Guns, Everest, and the Cotless series. So he's a working Icelandic director. And they brought him in to do Two Guns, which stars Denzel Washington and Mark Wahlberg, obviously based on the comic book from Boom Studios. It was released on August 2nd of 2013. Mixed reviews from critics. It did pretty well at the box office. That's the other thing. A lot of the stuff we talk about is almost like you could say, like, this particular podcast series that we're doing, you know, this comic strip, is really one of passion because we're not talking about anything anyone cares about at all, ever.
But I feel like if Denzel Washington is in something, people care.
I mean, this is the most successful of anything we've talked about in months.
Yeah.
Because if you remember, Cowboys and Aliens bombed at the box office. No one's ever fucking heard of The Losers. So this one actually made money. On a budget of $61 million, this one made $131.9 million.
You're more of a student of the box office than I am, but I would say that you'd have to work pretty hard to bomb with Denzel Washington and Mark Wahlberg. Am I wrong?
I mean, look, neither one of them has a perfect record. I would say on a budget of $61 million, it's pretty easy to make your money back. Might not be now, but it's funny. My daughter, you can tell my kids are quote unquote movie trained. My daughter's in the, you know, we were talking about, I asked her about the Marvels. Is she excited to go see it Friday? And she goes, yeah, how's it tracking? And I'm like, not well. It's looking like it's going to bomb worse than Ant-Man. And she's like, that's really makes me sad. I wish it would do better. And then she takes a pause and she goes, I don't believe that the box office of the theater is doing very well this year. And I'm looking at her. I'm like, well, everyone can tell you're my daughter. But but we had a long conversation on the way to choir practice.
Despite the second week drop off of Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah, 78%. Yeah, everyone who wanted to see that movie in the theater saw it that weekend.
Exactly.
And no, at no other time. I think once the word got out that it was also on Peacock, people were like, no, I'm not coming to the fucking theater to see this.
That's where I watched it.
Opening weekend?
No, we watched it Friday. We watched it the second weekend.
Look at you being the outlier. Anyway, so the movie did moderately well at the box office back in the year where people were going to the movies. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's got Denzel Washington, who is solid in almost anything he does. And, you know, like, Robert's not here to yell and scream about how terrible Mark Wahlberg is. But if we could be fair to Flair for just a moment, Mark Wahlberg is a solid actor. I think he's one where not a lot is asked of him many times.
I mean, generally, you want him to be Mark Wahlberg.
And I've noticed that trend, because I've said that now about Jason Statham and Claire Danes and a bunch of other people, where I feel like nobody asks them to act. they're like, just show up and be pretty and recite the lines, you know, be, and it's gotta be frustrating for an actor, you know, when you have the ability, because we've seen Mark Wahlberg stretch and act, and he's very usually very successful when he does. But you're right. I think a lot of times he comes in like, yeah, we have this part for you in Two Guns. Can you like be, you know, wink, you know, smarmy and wink at the camera and, you know, and be cooler than the other side of the pillow? Yeah, and be cooler than the other side of the pillow. And Mark Wahlberg's like, I want to do Death of a Salesman. They're like, no, stop. It's not what we want from you here. Like, damn it.
I know how he feels. I mean, show up and say your lines look pretty. That's pretty much how you pitch these podcasts to me.
Yes. And stop reducing Academy Award winning actresses to the one part, the one minor part they play in a giant movie.
That hurt you a lot more than it hurt me.
It totally did. Anyway, yeah.
As far as Denzel Washington, this is a movie, I mean, well, at least back in the olden days, if something was based on a comic, I'd be like, I'm there, I will watch it. And now everything's based on a comic, and I'm not even surprised anymore. But more than it being based on a comic, what interested me in this movie and why I was going to watch it one of these days, even before you proposed this episode, was Denzel Washington. If Denzel Washington's in a movie, I'm like, there's probably something more to it. Like, I hate revenge movies, like, you know, where the killer righteously murders everyone who wronged him. But I watched Man on Fire in the theater because I'm like, Denzel Washington's going to do something with substance to it. Or at least if Denzel's in it, I'm going to think there's substance to it, you know?
All right. And so this,
plus or minus, usually, go ahead.
Plus or minus 4 or 5 years, here's what Denzel Washington's doing between Two Guns. He did The Book of Eli and Unstoppable in 2010, Safe House and Flight in 2012. And then after Two Guns, he does The Equalizer. Then The Magnificent Sevens, then Fences, then Roman J. But he's like doing like one movie a year.
Roman J. Israel, first movie I bought at Dollar Tree.
Then he does The Equalizer 2. And in 2020, he did Academy Award nominee Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. By the way. So, you know, he could afford to take a Two Guns. You know, by the time we get to 2013, yeah, he's only really doing like one movie a year for the most part. Though in 2021, apparently he was making up for lost times. He did The Little Things. He did The Tragedy of Macbeth, which nobody saw, and A Journal for Jordan. And he's got Gladiator 2. God, I can't believe they're doing another Gladiator movie. And The Piano Lesson coming up. So that's what's going on with that. So Two Guns, a little bit more demographic information, then we'll get into this. Still on Denzel Washington. Here we go. I was starting to say that it's got a 65% approval rating and an average score of 6 out of 10. Metacritic gave it a 55 out of 100. You know, most people, it's like, yeah, it's fine. And it is. It's not going to win any awards. God knows it wasn't nominated for any. But I think if you're into the buddy cop action heist drug movie, this is, you know, and I mean, I rented it on Amazon for $4. It's worth a rental and an hour and 40 minutes of your time. It's not horrible. Denzel Washington and Mark Wahlberg really carry this movie with their personalities, because outside of that, there's nothing, you know, there's some mildly amusing stuff here and there. But for the most part, it's, if you like Denzel and you like Mark Wahlberg, it's a fun movie to watch. They're fun to watch for an hour and 40 minutes. But it follows the same plot as the comic book. It actually starts off in a diner. And I love the opening to this because, and I can't remember if they did this. I know in the comic book, the first thing they do is go across to the sheriff's office and put the sheriff behind bars. So they can have enough time with the bank that they need.
Yeah.
And here, in order to, I guess, cause a distraction, get the cops to deal with the fire, they blow up a diner. Which, you know, coincidentally also had the best donuts in three counties. So while law enforcement and firefighters and medical are dealing with the fire at the diner, they are free to then rob the bank. Yes,
no, Evan. Not quite.
Okay.
They blew up the diner so the cops wouldn't be across the street when they robbed the bank. They actually came back a couple days later.
Okay. I thought, for some odd reason, I thought the diner was at the diner and the robbery were at the same time.
No, I was confused by that. I think I actually have the notes I made as I was watching it right after. I don't think I can rock a hat like Denzel. Is why did they burn down the diner?
Yeah. So they rob the bank just like they do in the comic. They go to the desert just like they do in the comic. Mark Wahlberg wings Denzel just like they do in the comic. And then that's when you find out that Mark Wahlberg was working on behalf of the Navy to get the CIA's money because the Navy wants to do clandestine missions without having to go through the government. And they figure, well, if it worked for the CIA, it'll work for us too. And we'll just take their money. Who's going to report us? The CIA? Which leads me to my favorite character in this entire piece, because it's not Denzel Washington and it's not Mark Wahlberg. Though I will tell you, the scene where Mark Wahlberg is not in the comic, they go down to meet, what's the mob boss's name again?
Greco.
They go down to meet Greco.
Like Poppy Greco or something.
Yeah, Poppy Greco, yeah. They go down to meet Poppy Greco, and Denzel, like, the whole thing was that he was supposed to buy cocaine off of Poppy Greco, and Poppy Greco was like, well, here's cash. And he was like, no, we agreed on cocaine. Call me when you have the cocaine. And then he has to go back and deal with his handlers, like, you know, what is going on here? You don't seem to have a handle on this. But Mark Wahlberg is with him at the time. And there's this really funny exchange that happens because this is the fun of movies because none of this is in the book. But in adapting, this is why we do this podcast, in adapting a comic book to a movie, there are times where as you're establishing locations, as you're, you know, setting up your settings, you'll flesh things out, you'll add things. And so there's this whole sequence where the goons are doing like target practice and they're shooting at a chicken and they're all from Cobra.
Buried up to their necks.
Yeah. They're all from Cobra. None of them get the broadside of an aircraft carrier. and they're fucking with Mark Wahlberg and Mark Wahlberg's fucking with them back. And it's just a lot of jaw jacking. And finally, Mark Wahlberg, because again, you don't know he's Navy. You think he's just a bank robber. He pulls out his sidearm. And he immediately shoots all the bottles and the chickens. And then there's this really funny back and forth between, you know, one of the goons is like a fat guy, big fat guy. And he's like, yeah, I haven't seen your pecker since junior high or some shit. You know, and they're just going back and forth. It's great. And it's one of those where the only reason why I bring it up is for all the shit Mark Wahlberg gets as an actor, I don't know if any of that was ad-libbed or what. But Mark Wahlberg, when he's just a cocky prick, is hilarious. And it's one of my favorite parts of the movie, to be honest with you. Like, that little exchange, I was wildly amused with. But you don't know Mark Wahlberg is with the Navy until after they've got the money and he's winged Denzel and he goes and reports them. And they're like, well, why didn't you kill him? And he's like, because he didn't need to be killed. And he was like, well, then you have to die because you can't seem to follow orders, you dipshit. And then now he's on the run.
Cannot believe Cyclops would treat somebody that way.
His lips were not nearly as pronounced in this movie.
Well, that's because you could see his eyes.
It's true. Yeah, I didn't realize that was James Marsden at first.
Yeah.
Oh, look at him. James Marsden in a role where he's not being disrespected. So the movie goes on from that point, and then it's a lot of... this is what I was getting to. So my favorite character in this entire movie, there was Bill Paxton, who is the CIA agent. And he, at one point, he's talking to Greco. And they're both like, we both want the same thing. We want this $4.3 million that they took from us. It's our money, but we're willing to give you some of it so that everyone's happy. Because what we really want is the money back, and we want Denzel Washington and Mark Wahlberg to die. And in a moment that I feel is like was written by somebody who's very much like me, he was just like, it was something along the lines of, Poppy Greco, you have an enormous Mexican cock. Just a wonderful Mexican cock. And the only way Bill Paxton could deliver the line, he goes on and on about this for like 5 minutes. And then you're looking at me strange.
I legitimately don't remember that.
Probably because in your like weirdo Christian pure mind, you're like blocked. Oh, they're talking about penis. So...
I think I would have at least remembered that I checked out of that.
I don't know. Maybe you were distracted. Maybe your daughter wanted your attention. I look.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I watched that movie with my daughters.
I guarantee, because I laughed hard at that. Like, if there's, like, you know, because, like, I was watching it this morning.
Not denying it. I mean, maybe this is, like, you not realizing there were lots of naked people in Logan's Run. I don't know, you know? Maybe I can stop judging you for that.
There we go. See, now we're even. It's so funny. Him doing a monologue about Poppy Greco's dick was hilarious. Go back and watch it. Bill Paxton's really funny in that scene. But it's all about, like, okay, we get it. You're a big man on campus. Shut up already. Like, let's figure out how we're going to get this money back. It's a great scene. Other than that, I don't have a whole lot else to add about this movie. The action's, you know, competent but uninteresting. It's guys shooting at each other. Like, honestly, like, the most interesting action sequence is Mark Wahlberg shooting at the chickens. Other than that, like, meh.
I did like the scene where Denzel goes to his apartment looking for him, and the Navy guys come to take him out, and Wahlberg's, like, on the roof across the street, you know, trying to guide him through that. You undercut that for me a little bit when you pointed out that it's more interesting that Bobby, especially in the comics, has no idea what the heck he's doing. Whereas, you know, these guys were clearly much, much more in control. I mean, I feel like that somebody read the comic and was like, hey, this thing where these two guys are undercover and they don't realize it, this is a fantastic idea. Hey, Denzel, Mark Wahlberg, you want to do this movie? Sure. What are the characters like? Yeah, just do your own thing.
Well,
because they're not very much like the guys in the comic. I mean, Denzel Bobby is much more in control. Like when Bill Paxton's pulling his Russian roulette thing. I mean, Denzel is a cool customer.
So I'm thinking about Training Day, and we did an on trial on Training Day years ago. And I said that wasn't the one to give Denzel an Oscar for. All he does is whip his dick out and bang the scenery.
Bobby Greco.
Yes, I mean, it's a great scene and it's a great performance and everything. But I think what I was going with this is Denzel Washington is one of the best actors in the world. Certainly one of the best modern actors that we have. He deserved an Oscar. He deserved it for Malcolm X. He did not deserve it for Training Day. But I bring that up because it's another example of, I think, of people saw him in Training Day, and then that's all they ever wanted out of him. Can you just be that guy from Training Day all the time? Like, ugh, it was Malcolm X once. I was in Glory. Yes, we hear you, Denzel. But you see that Oscar? Yeah? Do what you did for the Oscar. Oh, my God. I yelled King Kong and got nothing on me. I know. Do it now. Do the thing. Do the thing, Denzel.
Not for nothing. I'm actually wanting to go watch Book of Eli right now again.
Anything else about Two Guns?
Yeah. Oh, anything else about Two Guns? I was disappointed in Fred Ward. The Admiral, I thought that was weird where he's like, oh, it's not my problem. I'm not going to turn you in. Just go away.
Yeah.
You dishonored the Navy, son. Let's see. What else? I feel like, oh, here's the part that almost took me out of the movie.
Hang on. Before you say that, I know I'm a dirty sex pervert. At least, you know, amongst the rest of you people, I am, you know, I am utterly corrupted. However, even I was like, does the chick really need to have her fucking top off? Like, I'm all for nudity, but like, I'm not for gratuitous nudity that serves no purpose. And it's not like when I complain about Megan Fox and Expendables 4, where like, why are you putting on lingerie to have sex? Like, no one would do that. This is one of those deals where you don't show them having sex. You show them having a conversation afterwards in bed. Just have her wearing a shirt.
As they did, like, two scenes later.
Yeah.
That was totally, I mean, and it wasn't, like, I've seen a lot more gratuitous stuff that didn't involve nudity, but that was just, like, I don't know. Yeah, that.
Either have them having
sex. I don't even have a good joke about that.
Either
because you literally did the same scene again and she had a top on.
Right. Either cut into the scene with them having sex and then just leave her topless, which would be fine. But they literally just have a conversation, and it feels a little like, you know, a conversation in a strip club. Facts can confirm. Like, you know, I don't understand why she's topless. Like, why does she have to be topless for this scene when all they're doing is an exposition dump? And that's coming from the guy who, you know, who hasn't gone a week on this network lately without talking about porn of some kind. Like, I like naked women as much as anything.
You aren't wearing your irreversible shirt tonight, so.
Not tonight. I will next time for you, though, big boy.
I realize if you rewind it, it is reversible.
Anywho, I wish I could do like a cartoon bells every time I wink. Blink. Anyway, yeah, I'll let you say where you get your piece, but I just needed to bring that up. Like,
no, you're right. It was totally it was ridiculous. I mean, you could make the same argument, but the fact that 5 minutes later they do the exact same scene and she's got a top on.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. All right, anything else about Two Guns?
There was. But what was it? I feel like it was really good, too. Wow. Wish Jesse could come in and edit this right now. Oh, yes. The scene that almost took me out of the movie.
Okay.
And I don't mind that they had it in there, but I think they did it poorly, was the crossing the border.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Go on.
I got no problem. You want to tell me that even illegal immigrants are human? Of course they are. No problem with that. You want to say, hey, and all this, you know, flippant action stuff, here's something real that's going on. Okay. But like it just came out of nowhere. And then Greco was like talking about, hey, you're going to cross the border like we cross the border because, you know, you Americans treat us Mexican. It's like, dude, you're hopping across the border to stay with your mistress and your kid all the time. You don't have a leg to stand on. And I don't know. I thought it was like a cool moment that showed, you know, that Stig is a good guy when he saved the guy that was going to drown. But it just was totally out of nowhere.
And it felt like a studio
almost like the nude scene, you know.
It definitely felt like a studio note. Like, and now a brief moment on why illegal immigration's okay.
Like, I mean, I didn't have a problem with the message, but it just was totally out of nowhere. I mean, maybe they said, hey guys, we'd like a little commentary on illegal immigration, and we didn't pay Paula Patton all this money for her to keep her top on.
Yeah, I do wonder if that was a thing. It was just like, well, we have the R rating because of all the shooting and violence and everything, and people get hit with bats. Like, all right, well, I guess we could have her topless in this, and you know, and she's not big enough.
Yeah, those two scenes were just weird and distracting. But I mean, I had forgotten about it until he did the thing at the end where he blows up the car and the money's flying around, and I'm like, wait a minute, that was like the poster for the movie. That was the thing I remember from the preview, and that's your climax. But I don't know. I mean, mainly it was just watching Denzel be Denzel and watching Mark Wahlberg crack wise. And I did slightly prefer the movie. Maybe just because I saw it first. If I had read the comic first, I would have been like, man, they're really just veering way off from this.
Of all the ones we've done, this is the fourth one of these we've done kind of in a row, I think. Because we started off with I Kill Giants. Then we did, I think, Cowboys and Aliens. Then The Losers. Now this. And this is probably, I don't know. I think this was the most enjoyable. But I Kill Giants gave us the most to talk about.
Yeah.
The Losers was entertaining, but kind of nondescript, and the comic book was confusing. And then, yeah, Cowboys and Aliens. I almost didn't want to do that show.
And I just said, now you were already talking with me about what we'll do next. And, I said something that doesn't involve, military or ex-military personnel being framed for a crime they didn't commit and fighting against their former supervisor.
Yes, no more fighting with the CIA books for us. Actually, so that is our conclusion to this episode of Comic Strip, our review and our comparison and contrast of Two Guns, the book to the movie. So Evan Bevins will be back in a couple of months, I think we decided. I think the beginning of February.
Yes.
And we're taking a break from...
I'm going to reschedule at least once because that's just what I do.
We're taking... If Evan's house doesn't fall apart into the fucking sea like the poltergeist that, you know...
It was my car this time, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Mark, you seem tense. Would you feel better if I put the hat back on?
You can do whatever you want, big boy. Anyway, Evan, we're taking a break from comic strip. So we have been pitching around these like triple features for a while now. I just want to tell the story real quick. And at one point I had thrown out there like Elektra, Tank Girl, and I think Josie and the Pussycats.
Josie and the Pussycats. Yeah. And then you unceremoniously kicked me off.
That's not what happened, you woman. What I said was, I feel like Josie and the Pussycats needs its, like, its own show. And then Pat jumped in and started throwing ideas out there. So we fashioned together an entire triple feature based on girl bands. So it was Josie and the Pussycats, I think Spice Girls and the Strangers or something like that. I don't remember what it was.
Satisfaction,
yeah, with Justine Bateman.
And I'm going to watch that, Josie and the Pussycats. I don't have any interest in Spice World, but I'm going to watch those. Stop me from enjoying those movies,
Radulich. You don't be on the podcast if you can get your fucking life together. You weren't kicked off, but Pat decided, like, I want to do that show. And I'm like, okay, great. And if Evan wants
to, again. No, I was like, I would watch those. I can still jump on there. And then I'm like, and I would just be going, uh-huh, uh-huh. Yeah, that's a good point. So, yeah, no, I would be, when it comes to the Spice Girls, I don't think I could hold a candle to you and Pat.
So anyway, but then, you know, it was like, okay, well, what am I doing with Evan? And then I think I started throwing ideas out there and you weren't responding to me fast enough. So I was, you know, harassing you.
I was then,
oh my God. So was I, who cares? And then so I threw out the Flintstones and Pat, and then Chris Bailey jumped all over that. He was like, when are we doing that? And I'm like, I don't know, when you can crawl out of your wife's fucking ass. I mean, like, Jesus Christ, stop paying attention to your wives, people, and do more podcasting. It's not like that got me into trouble. Anywho. So Chris Bailey jumped all over the Flintstones and we scheduled that. And Chris and Evan, poor Evan Bevins is like, what about me, boss? You know how this whole conversation started? And real quick, just to preview this for me, what is your big thing with Jennifer Garner?
Nothing really. I mean, she's from West Virginia. She's flipping adorable.
Okay, well, then it's not nothing. Jesus Christ. Like, come on.
Well, but I mean, it's not like Amy Adams.
Oh, is Amy Adams your Selma Hayek from, like, for you? It's like, is that the one that puts stars in your eyes and your heart jumps out of your chest?
I will watch anything that Amy Adams is in except for Nocturnal Creatures Again. Once was more than enough. But no, I think Amy Adams is a fantastic actress and she's an absolute delight. Jennifer Garner, I went to review 13 Going on 30, and my brother and I went to watch it, and I'm like, I don't know that two guys in this movie, that seems kind of weird. But she's just absolutely delightful. And then the original one, you said in the chat, you're like, man, I didn't know so many people would want to do Josie and the Pussycats. And I'm like, it wasn't Josie. I wanted to watch Elektra. And this was after we had already come up with an alternate triple feature. And so then, so I said, well, you know, I was wanting to watch Elektra again. And, but you asked me why I was so excited about Elektra. I'm like, oh, it's not that. I just, you know, I had an anecdote. I was wanting to watch it again. And I remember my takeaway when I saw it in the theater was, well, Jennifer Garner's just too adorable to be a relentless assassin. Right. And then I said, well, except for Peppermint.
All right. And I'm like, well, that's two out of three. And then as it turns out, she's going to be in a Netflix movie. So I'm like, all right, there it is. Three Jennifer Garner movies. And I can make fun of Evan Bevins for an hour saying, you know, he wants to have 10,000 of her babies. It'll be fantastic.
I appreciate Jennifer Garner. Okay.
You're allowed. Evan, this is the Radulich Broadcasting Network. If nothing else, you are allowed to like pretty girls.
Yeah, but I like the idea also of doing like two Jennifer Garner as hardcore killer movies and then Jennifer Garner family comedy.
Yes.
So, which is also the style for the rejected triple feature that you don't want to tell the people about. But I said instead of doing a Flintstones Long Road to Ruin, you should do Casino, Leaving Las Vegas, and the Flintstones Viva Rock Vegas.
This is why you only come on every 6 months.
Hey, if you guys want to hear Mark do that triple feature, put it in the comments. Smash that like button.
Okay, thanks. So yes, Evan will be back in a few months, and we'll do the Jennifer Garner movies, Elektra, Family Switch, and Peppermint. So in the meantime, tomorrow, myself, Jesse Starcher, and Robert Cooper will be back on the Metal Hammer of Doom. We are going to look at Poppy, and that inspired me to go look for a list, and that list was the 10 times pop artist stole from metal. So that'll be generate a fun discussion. I'm sure Jesse will do something with artificial intelligence, or I don't know, tell a story about his daughter drinking. We'll figure something out. We went two and a half hours, I think, the last time, because we were telling so many stories on that show. I don't know if it's going to be that much. And then Wednesday, Alexis, I think Jesse, who knows what else, they're going to do a TV party for the boys spinoff Gen V. And then this weekend, we've got an alternative commentary re-air for, what's this one? This one is, Space Invaders. That was the one that Pat pitched me years ago. And then
tried to watch that with my kids, and they weren't impressed.
And then after that, on Metal Hammer of Doom Sundays is our review of Slayer Repentless from years ago, so 2015 or 2016, whatever year we're up to at this point. So that's what I got going on. I am at Mark Radledge on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it. I'm more importantly, I am at Mark Radledge on TikTok. Go look at my TikTok. I've got karaoke, I've got concert footage, and I got 10-minute clips of all my podcasts, of which there will be one of this tonight. Evan Bevins, show us where you piss from.
I'm just going to plug some podcasts and blog stuff, okay?
That sounds great.
You can find my writing at asterisk51.blogspot.com. Running a little behind, but I've been making my way through NFL Super Pro, which is arguably the greatest NFL tie-in comic produced by Marvel Comics in the early 90s.
It's a lot of qualifiers.
You would really enjoy. I just did the issue that got recalled for racist depictions of Native American culture.
Oh, terrific.
And it didn't even involve the Washington Redskins.
What are they, like the Commanders now or some shit?
Yeah. They managed to find the one name that was more generic than football team.
I think they should have left that as football team.
I do too. But they didn't ask me. So I've got that. I'm actually coming up on my 200th post. So I went back into one of my all-time favorite comics, X-Factor number 32, which is significant for no reason other than that I read the crap out of it. And turns out it's still fun. Pretty soon, Jesse and I will be getting together again for Snap Material, our look at the Marvel mobile game Snap. It's actually coming up on the one-year anniversary of at least when we started playing the game. I think the game technically released in October, but Jesse and I are running a little behind. But so we'll be talking about the last season featuring Elsa Bloodstone and what's ahead and some of our favorite cards and all that stuff. So you can find that with the source material, Jesse's show, and all that good stuff. And then, after our conversation this weekend, I've, been re-inspired to suggest triple features that you will never, ever greenlight.
I think my favorite one that we ever did was our really odd Christmas movies one. That was In Bruges, The Ref, and...
Batman.
No, but the one we actually did.
No, that is what we did. In Bruges, The Ref, and Fat Man.
Fat Man is what you just said. Okay, yes. You were. So I needed to take a break from comic strip one. We're running out of like easy ones to do. I think at this point,
only so many things where the CIA frame, ex-military. Well,
when I look at, I mean, first of all, we've done a lot. Even before we started comic strip, we had done a lot of these because we were just doing them in two different episodes. We did them as source materials, and then we did them as whatever the on trials or whatever.
We did an Umbrella Academy back in the day. You didn't want it to be a comic strip, but I said, Mark, I can only do one show. So you're like, fine, it's a comic strip.
That's right. And then I have tried to pawn Umbrella Academy back on Alexis because more seasons have come out since then, and she has not yet taken me up on it. I don't want to watch it anymore. I feel bad because like I there are some people like I'm not doing any more of these podcasts with anybody I'm social now. And then it was like, well, I'm not as social as I used to be, and I kind of miss doing this stuff. So like slowly like working these things back in, and I look back at some of the ones that I abandoned, and I'm like, oh, we never did finish Umbrella Academy, but I don't want to. I don't care enough. It was definitely one of those ones where I watched it because it was a comic book show, and I'm like, eh, it's whatever. We had good conversations. I just didn't care enough. And Robert will shoot me if I ever ask him to do Lock and Key again. So, but like we've done 300. We've done a bunch. We did the Old Guard. We did the American Crime, whatever the name of the book was. So like when I look at that list, that Wikipedia list, like we're getting down to the point where there's some out there, but it's like almost like, you know, like Amazon Prime exclusive movies and shit. Yeah. Or the book itself is hard to find.
Yeah, well that's, I found one, you know, I do on my blog, asterisk51.blogspot.com. I do Dollar Tree Cinema, and I found one called The Scribbler that it has like a really interesting yeah. view, and I can't find the book. Well, I mean, I can find it, but I ain't paying that much for it.
Right. That was one where I was going to suggest it to you, and then I was like, no, I can't find, like, the book is not available without going to like a pirate site and giving my, you know, my giving my computer a weekly virus. So anyway, so we'll do some triple features, and then we'll come back to this when something interesting piques our interest. But all right, until then, he's Evan Bevins. I'm Mark Rattledge. Be well, be safe, and be